Good morning, and welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. We've had some technical problems, and we have, I believe, straightened them out, and we're going to be getting Elizabeth Roberts on the line as soon as we possibly can. So anyway, we are going to be talking with her, and as we're waiting for her call, I wanted to let Elizabeth let you know about Elizabeth Roberts. She's a board-certified medical doctor that specializes in child and adolescent psychiatry. She's been involved very, very much with children over the last 30 years, and half of that, she worked as a physician. She's also worked as a child and adolescent psychiatrist. She's worked in private psychiatric hospitals, public state hospitals, emergency rooms, county clinics, various group practices. She's worked as a consultant to pediatricians and psychologists. She's also been a former medical director for young adults of Hazelden, and this is a facility that is known around the world for its drug and alcohol rehabilitation. Currently, she's the medical director of a psychiatric emergency room for children, and she also is in private practice. She lectures, she does radio programs, and then she decided she would do a book. So anyone that wanted to understand more about how to deal with children, various components of mental illness with children, we have so many labels. Dr. Roberts, are you with me?
I am, Donna.
You know, I'm absolutely fascinated with the fact that your life has entailed such a diversity of involvement with children. And I would like to ask you, how did you begin with an interest in this area? Because you have, I mean, we women are typically very nurturing anyway. And most women, I can't say all, but most women really have this strong need to protect and to take care of the children that they have in their lives. What was it that made you decide you were going to, as a famous chef says, kick it up a few notches and really go into a level and a depth of involvement that most people would shy away from?
That's a great question. You pegged me exactly. I am definitely one of those women who loves and nurtures children. Who knows if it's genetics or hormones or just a state of mind. But I started taking care of children really since I was a kid. And at first, just organizing little community summer camp activities for the neighborhood kids, even as young as 12 years old. But once I got to college, I had volunteered in high school with the handicapped kids and so forth. I got to college and I started volunteering in a homeless shelter that was also housing a runaway shelter. And every step of the way, and this is the progress, I would see such devastating problems in the children's lives that couldn't just be managed by, a kiss and a hug and a warm lunch at school. And it was a much more complicated thing. And I just thought that any of us who have the privilege and the opportunity to educate ourselves so that we can advocate for kids are really duty-bound to do so. And so every step of the way, it seemed like it did kick it up a notch. When I started teaching in Chicago public schools, and the devastating social problems that I saw in these families that led to these children's failure in school, which had less to do with the number of computers, and partially to do with the number of student-to-teacher ratio, but just had to do with, oppressive problems in these families' lives. I thought, okay, kick it up again. Go to med school, see what you can do about taking care of families in a more direct way, and that's how I came to finally rest at this position where I am now.
Now, you didn't go in to med school, and correct me if I'm wrong, until 1988.
That's correct. This is probably like a third career for me.
So here you are in a mature part of your life where you go after a medical degree. I think that's one of the most wonderful aspects about our world today, that we don't have an age discrimination about getting an education.
No.
And it's marvelous that the medical community is open to mature individuals coming into it.
Oh, absolutely. And Donna, I want to promise you, 30 years ago, there is no way they would have accepted me in medical school. Donna, not only was I a woman 30 years old, but I was also a single mother with three children, 8, 7, and 4 years old. No way would any medical school have accepted me. So, you know, the fact that times have changed have allowed some of us who have a lot they want to give to the profession and to the community an opportunity to do that. It's a new world.
Well, and I'm so thrilled because there are so many challenges, and I think in the medical environment that there needs to be what I'd call some new blood, new mental blood. It's like there needs to be an oxygenated process here to be able to think out of the box, to be able to think differently and realize that common sense prevails. But sometimes we have to ask questions. Sometimes we have to be a detective. And often you have found yourself in that very positioning, haven't you?
Yeah, very often. I think I bring to the table an experience that many of my colleagues don't have. You might be surprised or not to know that a lot of child psychiatrists don't have any children of their own. I'm really not quite sure, and I'm sure I would be, you know, blasted to say this, but I still don't understand how you can treat children as a child psychiatrist and really have never raised any of your own. Anyway, I brought a lot of experience to the table that humbled me in a way that I didn't walk into the medicine with, you know, an arrogance. I was ready to look at it, like you say, from a very common sense point of view. And it has made me, at times when I voice those views, a bit of a renegade.
Yes, I would say that's very much the case. And I think it's good you are a renegade. I think that your book gives so much good information. We have so many perspectives we could address, but we don't have the time to go into all of them. But we have a perspective that I would like to address where you have people that in the psychiatric field, in the medical field, that they feel like all they have to do is hand out a pill. And we have so many kids that are being given medication. We have teachers that are saying to parents, your child has attention deficit learning disorder, and so they need to be put on Ritalin, they need to be put on some kind of medication. And it's just mind-boggling to me. I've interacted with families that are just frustrated because they say, wait a minute, you're giving my kid a label. Where are you getting this from? And they're scared to death to question. They've got legal systems that work against them as parents. They're threatened that their child will be taken from them. And I know of a couple of cases where because the parents objected to the medication, the child was removed from their home.
That's right.
You then have the other side where you can have a child that has serious mental illness. You have dietary deficiencies. You have all of these things. So let's go with a parent's positioning. I mean, we live in a real weird world today. I mean, I don't know that it hasn't been weird for every generation, but we're dealing with ours today. How in the world can a parent, first of all, if they're having something wrong with their child, if they're encountering some severe problems, who can they go to? How do they find out about reputable people?
Well, I would say ask friends and family, get recommendations, and then bottom line, because, you know, you're not always going to find that people know who's good, is trust your gut. I would not stop seeking second, third, fourth, and fifth opinions from doctors, therapists, psychologists, until I felt as a parent that the person advising me really had taken the time to understand my child completely in the context of everything happening to the child, not just focusing on one or two little symptoms. When I felt really that person understood my child fully and took the time to explain to me what, you know, the condition was, what caused it, what repairs it, the options, meds and not meds, until you find someone that in your gut you feel really does all of that, I'd keep looking. Because otherwise, you're going to walk in and say, my child's teacher says he's not paying attention and needs Ritalin. And if that's all you ever get out of your mouth, then the doctor certainly will, 99% of the time, write a script for Ritalin or some Ritalin-like product like Adderall, Concerta, Focalin, whatever, and have you out the door in 10 minutes. Whereas if you were able to tell the whole story, you could say, my child's teacher said he can't pay attention, but let me tell you, my husband and I are going through a horrible divorce. You know, we fight every night. The child is in the midst of this tug of war. And when that whole story comes out, you know, you might say, oh, and the child is irritable, and the child is crying, and the child can't concentrate, and now he's clowning around in class for attention. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, maybe he doesn't have ADHD. Maybe he's going through an adjustment because his parents are in crisis. But if your clinician, whether it's a therapist, a psychiatrist, a pediatrician, doesn't understand all of that, they're going to jump to the conclusion that is, you know, popular for today. You know, and if you're a hammer, everything's a nail. So if you're a teacher and the child doesn't behave, it's ADHD. If you're a psychiatrist, these days, if a child is irritated, irritable, angry, has tantrums when he doesn't get his way, oh, well, that's bipolar now. If the child's anxious and doesn't have a lot of friends, oh, now we call that Asperger's, which is a form of autism. I mean, mm-hmm. It's whatever is popular. And if you see that kind of knee-jerk, jump-to-a-conclusion kind of response to your, you know, seeking help, then that clinician is not taking the time they need to, and you don't have that gut feeling you're being understood, then I'd move on.
You give some startling statistics.
Yes.
And I need to share them with my audience. Yes. The Surgeon General's 1999 report estimated that 21% of children ages 9 through 17 experience the signs and symptoms of a psychiatric disorder in the course of any given year.
Right.
The Center for Disease Control reported in 2002 that almost 20% of the office visits to pediatricians surveyed were for psychosocial problems, eclipsing both asthma and heart disease.
Correct.
According to the DEA, the number of prescriptions for medications like Ritalin, an amphetamine class drug, and from what I understand, it's one molecule away from cocaine.
Well,
it's risen by 500% since 1991. That is incredible. And in 2002, an estimated 10.8 million prescriptions were dispensed for patients younger than 18. Minors are beginning to outpace the elderly.
That's
in the consumption of pharmaceuticals, this is according to the FDA, as reported by the Wall Street Journal.
That's correct.
This is appalling.
It's amazing.
It is appalling. I mean, this is just, it's like this is supposed to be the magic bullet, and it isn't, because it's going to contribute to major problems as they're adults, because their bodies are young, they're growing, they're forming. You have things that are affecting their body chemistry, and you could be introducing a dependency on this. My gracious. I mean, it's just, it's mind-boggling.
Right. But you see, this whole problem has evolved slowly with several features adding in their piece. Number one, when you think about what the parents are, I mean, it's not like parents aren't playing their part as well. Since the time that you and I were raised, and now the times that we're watching our peers raise their children, things have changed dramatically in the way that people raise their kids. When we were children, parents were in charge. They were the boss. They were the mentor, the teacher, you know, the benevolent dictator. That is not the way kids are raised today. Kids are raised today, a lot of families want to be chummy, friendly, pals, popular even, with their children and their children's friends. To that end, parents aren't as often saying no. Children are being indulged. Now, an indulged child tends to be cranky, irritable, demanding, and does what he wants to do because he isn't disciplined. So
we used to call them spoiled brats.
That's what they used to call them. Now they call it bipolar or ADHD. Now, that is not to say that all children who can't concentrate in school are not ADHD. I am, for a moment, let's set aside children with a legitimate mental illness. I'm not saying that. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is this incredible increase is not because we have that many more children in America. I don't even believe it's because we have that much more ADHD and bipolar. I'm telling you that what I'm seeing in my practice is that more and more parents who have indulged their children and created these monsters who won't listen, do what they want, and have tantrums when they don't get what they want and terrorize the classroom and the teacher are being brought to the doctor's office, and the doctor is too chicken to tell the parents the truth, or he really doesn't want to look that long and see it. It's much easier to tell a parent who is very sensitive, very defensive, doesn't really want to hear that Johnny is having problems because you're a bad parent. That is a very painful reality to face. It is much easier to tell your client or your patient, the parent, that your that their child is having problems based on a brain-based disorder, a chemical imbalance, if you will, rather than to tell the parent that they need to change their parenting practices.
Mm-hmm.
That is very hard for the parent to hear, and very difficult for the clinician to say, and so it doesn't get said. And it's easier to just prescribe a pill. And a lot of parents are thrilled. Now, there are parents that are disturbed by these trends and don't want their kids on meds, and they say hallelujah to those folks because, you know, their kids have a chance of not being placed on all these meds. But like you said, and there's some really amazing cases of children who, when their parents didn't want to give them the Ritalin, the school came after them with CPS and tried to take custody of the children.
Mm-hmm.
There was a very publicized case of this up in Albany, New York. And these people, finally, you know, the court said, the judge said, all right, fine, we won't take your child for not giving him the Ritalin that's keeping him up all night and giving him, you know, reducing his appetite to nothing. We'll let you take your child off of Ritalin if you can find a doctor who will say that's okay. I mean, this is, you know, this is terrorism by the state.
That's right.
So, but this is, you see what's happening. You've got schools that don't have the budgets to, you know, break down the classroom to what they need to be able to do is take these undisciplined children and put them in separate classrooms to first get them the discipline they're not getting at home. And you can do that when you have one-on-one, but they don't have a budget to do that. You know what? A teacher with only four or five kids in a classroom to finally teach them the discipline they're not getting at home before they can rejoin the class and learn math and English. And then you've got the parents who don't want to face the fact that you've got to be the bad guy as a parent. Your job is to be the, you know, the mentor, the teacher, you know, the Marine sergeant, not the, you know, fairy godmother or grandma mm-hmm. giving out the candy and the treats. And as a doctor, you've got to listen to the story, hear what's said by the parents, and address the problems rather than shirk away and hand out a pill. You see, this is complicated. It's not just one problem.
Well, not only
grown.
That, but you brought up a point where there are situations where there may be, and I know I have been aware of this with some situations, not all, but some, where there's actually sometimes a need of a supplementation where maybe the kid, for some reason, is not getting certain types of food or certain nutritional components. Maybe there needs to be an evaluation physically. You know, there's all of these various tests. So when a parent has this, they come into your office, what is it they are subject to? I know you're going to take the time to talk with them and make an evaluation. But what should a parent expect if they're dealing with a child, for example, let's say it's a teenager, and this teenager is one of these very, very melodramatic personalities, and they're scaring their parents half to death because they might be saying, gee, I hate life, I'm going to go out and kill myself. You know, maybe they've watched something on television or they're around some peers. And the parents are just beside themselves because they get all inundated with all this media stuff, and they go, oh, my goodness, we're terrible parents, and maybe they've been very good parents. There's nothing wrong with them. Mm-hmm. What is it that would happen when they walked into your office?
Well, like I said, a thorough evaluation starts with a complete history of what's been going on. Then, like you said, too, you want to rule out any kind of medical conditions that could be causing the child's behavior. So if you've understood all the social pressures the child is under, you know, are you failing at school? Is this making you feel very ashamed and upset and your self-esteem is taking a hit and you are depressed? Are your peers teasing you? Are you being abused emotionally, physically, or maybe even sexually by some caregiver in your life, you know, a babysitter, a coach, or somebody? Are there any medical conditions, thyroid conditions? Blood tests should be done. Urine tox tests should be done on teenagers especially, but some children I know have told me they started drinking at 10 years old. And that's not that shocking. I mean, I've heard of much younger. A 7-year-old I treated once, a teenager I treated once told me that at 7 years old, he started smoking marijuana with his parents. Mm. So, you know, you need to make sure that you've eliminated the causes of mental illness derived from drug addiction and drug abuse. And they want to also rule out all the medical conditions. And yes, kids have allergies to things that can make them very agitated in the classroom. I know of a case, a pharmacist friend of mine, whose son was thought to be ADHD. Of course, with the pharmacist knowing exactly what Ritalin was, he said, no way, not doing that to my son. Took him to an allergist and found out he had allergies. And when he avoided those, you know, foods and substances, he was fine.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to, you know, uncover every, but sometimes the answer jumps out at you. It's very obvious, like the first example I gave you. So the child's agitated and the parents are going through a very hostile divorce. Well, I don't have to do a whole lot of seeking. After that, I recognize what the problem is. And the first thing that has to happen is the parents have to put down the hatchet knives, you know, and you know, bring peace back into the home. And that has to start maybe with parenting and couple counseling, so that as these people go through their divorce, they can do it in a way that puts the child first and not their own need to get even. So, you know, that would be the way, you know, every family, every case, every kid, you know, a different kind of advocacy. Sometimes, you know, it's a school-based problem and you need to address it. Maybe you have to ask the school to get more services. Maybe it's impossible because it's a social problem and the whole school is turned against the child. I had a case like that. I said to the parent, you need to move if you want to stay in public school so you can have her in another school, or you advocate to the school to switch her because of the social problems, or put her in a private school. But you can't leave her in this environment. She's just going to be crushed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really depends on the child. Now, if you've done these interventions and nothing's changing, you need to keep looking. You know, maybe there are other more subtle or rare medical conditions that haven't been, you know, looked at that need to be, you know. So, you know, I'm just saying that it's not a good idea for parents to try to diagnose their own children. And that's one of the problems that we'll see in psychiatry, because my colleagues are not taking very much time with a parent to explain everything. They're lost. What am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
The doctor didn't tell me anything. I got shooed out the door. So they go on the Internet and they try to educate themselves. And the Internet is full of misinformation. I had a mother come in here just last week with her son psychotic. I think he's been just using too much. He was very open about the fact that he uses drugs every day, and now he's starting to get psychotic, freshman in college. And she got on the Internet and decided she diagnosed her son bipolar. And I said, no.
mm-hmm.
You know, parents, please, stay away from the Internet. Do not try to diagnose your child. The internet could replace doctors, I'd be out of a job. And I'm still working. So my advice to you is you want to pick the brains of the doctors you can trust, but you've got to find them first, and that is tough. And if you have to wait a long time to get into the better doctor, you just wait. You just keep searching till you find the therapist and the doctor and the social worker that can really understand your family and help you. But don't try to do it on your own. It just creates disaster, because then you're shopping for the doctor that's going to agree with you and prescribe the medication that you want for your child. And I've seen a lot of that.
Oh, it's a sad statement when the standards are of such a level that you can walk in, there is no checking to see if there's been another physician consulted and interacting with other physicians, saying what is it you find, you know, sharing of information. We live in a very unique time. My guest today has been Dr. Elizabeth Roberts. She is in California. Dr. Roberts, your book, Should You Medicate Your Child's Mind, I think is wonderful because you have four sections to it. You give good sound advice about how to look for a professional and how to perhaps get down to the basis or to work with a physician as to how to determine what's wrong, whether your child really needs medication or not, and what you can do. It's just down to earth. It's a lot of it's good common sense. You talk about the various drugs. I think this book is really a very, very valuable asset in any parent's library. It should give them a sense of confidence and a sense of some kind of assurance that if their child needs help, they've got it. Do you have a website people can go to?
I do. It's www.drelizabethroberts.com. So it's drelizabethroberts.com. And you can go there and click on four different links to find the book. If you want to purchase it, Amazon's selling it for only $10.90-something, so it's very within reach for anyone. And the book goes over what the diagnoses really are and explains all the jargon doctors use. So, you see, a lot of times Internet searches mislead parents because it'll say, if your child has mood swings. Now, what your parents think when you say that term means something completely different to you than what it means to a psychiatrist, because it has a very specific meaning. Well, I decode all of that jargon for you in the book. I go over every side effect of every medication. And the very end of the book, I talk about parenting practices that really do work, so that, you know, if that's the cause of the problem, you can eliminate the whole worry of needing or not needing meds by just, you know, straightening things out at home with the way you address your child's behaviors. So the book is a good start for, you know, sorting out who you can trust and why you should trust them and what to expect from a trustworthy doctor, and at least it's a start. But again, you can't beat the experience of a good clinician, whether that's a doctor, a therapist, a psychologist. You know, you can't beat that. So, you know, find someone who can help you, who will advocate for you and your child, and don't stop looking till you find that person. And
that's
my best advice.
Should you medicate your child's mind? Excuse me for interrupting you, Dr. Roberts. We are out of time.
Okay.
Dr. Elizabeth Roberts has been my guest. Should you medicate your child's mind? You know, it makes sense. This book will tell you whether or not your kid needs psychiatric medication, and it's even more than that. I strongly recommend this book, and her website is drelizabethroberts.com. Dr. Roberts, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. It's been a pleasure having you as a guest today.
Thank you so much, Donna. I really appreciate the opportunity to share with your audience.
It's been a joy. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. This is Donna Sebo. Don't you go away now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and this show is being broadcast from Fairbanks, Alaska, through our studios in California, here on bbsradio.com. I have to tell you, it is absolutely magical outside. It looks, and I know I said this yesterday, but it looks like a magical winter wonderland here in Fairbanks, Alaska, and the temperature is a delightful, balmy 0 degrees, so nothing is going to be melting anytime soon. But it really is amazing when you look out and you can see trees that during the summer months are so brilliantly green. At this time, they are all dressed up with snow and crystals. And when the sunlight comes through, it creates this iridescence. It's absolutely magnificent. Now, by the way, our phone lines are open. If you'd like to give me a call, here are the telephone numbers to call in to. And remember, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then I'm delighted to give you intuitive insight, and then you're welcome to ask a question of me about anything you like. Here is the toll-free number in the U.S., 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Also in Canada, the toll-free number is 888-810-8322. That's 888-810-8322. I wanted to share a thought with you by Matthew E. May, and I like it because it's so much of a picture in the mind. Whatever your work, make it your art, your canvas, and your sandbox. Think about that. Whatever your work, make it your art, your canvas, and your sandbox. And to me, that was such a compliment of thought that goes along with a track and field legend, Roger Bannister. Now, Roger had a passion, a real passion for running, and he ran the first sub-4-minute mile back in 1994. That does seem like a long time ago, doesn't it? And what his example is that whatever we might have as an avocation, as well as our primary occupation, can develop from much more than our wish just to compete or to improve. He said as a runner that he runs not because he thinks it's doing him good, but because he enjoys it. And he cannot help but run. He just loves it. And when I encounter people who have a love, let's say, for making dolls, or someone that loves to work with computers, or someone else that thinks the greatest joy of life is fixing a special airborne 3-egg omelet that flips from pan to pan. I mean, whatever is that that brings you joy, you need to really look at that and ask yourself to pay attention to what brings you a lot of satisfaction. Our guest today, Dr. Elizabeth Roberts, her passion is children. Her passion has taken her into so many different areas and arenas, and though she has 3 children of her own, she decided to expand on that. She said, I want to know more because this means so much to me. You may have another arena of your own. See, we're all individuals, and that's what makes it so very, very special. And that's what makes it so magical. I was talking with someone this morning that is in their late 50s, and this person said, you know, I have a passion for Spanish, and I am now going to be going and getting a degree that allows me to take what I have in the area of business and combine it with my passion for this language and for communication and for working in an international environment and make it come together. And this person is a mature individual. Isn't that wonderful? You need to realize that wherever you are in your life, whatever you find yourself experiencing, that where you are is now, but now can also change. And it changes with what? A thought. One thought can make a difference. Questioning, examining, It's a good thing to do. So just know that this is who you are as a person, and if you find that there's just such a joy in doing something, know that there's a place for you in this world of experience where your joy can be fulfilled. And again, it can be an avocation, it can be a full-time vocation. I know a guy once that he carved ducks. Now that would be, you know, as exciting to me as mud, but this guy, he loved to carve. He was just absolutely and passionately in love with carving. Well, he worked as a butcher, he had a family to support, and he enjoyed being a butcher, but that wasn't the passion of his life, it was his carving that was his life. Well, he went on to win a number of national awards, and when I saw these birds that he carved, they were spectacular. He would sit in his garage at this special table that he had built, and he would carve, and he would just imbue a life into the wood. And then when he finished carving, he then developed the skill of painting, and he got into decoys, all kinds of things, and he was renowned for his work. And when he retired, then he decided he was going to do it full time. Traveled all over the country, different parts of the world, putting his work on display. And he was loved and appreciated. And we all have ways that we can fulfill ourselves, but it's being willing and being open to doing that. And you're the only person that can do that. You are the only person that can do that. This is Donna Sebo. If you would like to chat with me today, give me a buzz at 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Or if you're from Canada, you can call me at 888-810-8322. That's 888-810-8322, and we'll be delighted to take your call. You know, we were talking about children earlier, and I want you to know that there is a special website that you can go to, and this is great, especially for younger children, that at Crayola.com, there are 1,000 coloring pages and hundreds of craft projects that you can download for free. And all you have to do is go into the site and register, and your child can even receive an email newsletter, and he has a chance to win prizes in Crayola's contest. So it's something that if you have kids and you go, gee whiz, I need a project for my youngsters, check out Crayola.com. You're going to find you've got a lot more than you bargained for, and it's all for free. All you have to do is have the printer and have the paper, and you're ready to go, and you've got new projects for your young ones. Donna Sebo here. I also wanted to share with you some information, because I know we're going to be going to break pretty soon. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Richard Smith. We're going to be talking with a real estate specialist. This is a man who loves real estate. This is his passion and has been for a number of years. So he's going to be sharing some tidbits with us. So if you're a person that wants to invest in real estate, if you're interested in buying your own home, I think you'll find his details fascinating. Then on Thursday, we are going to be talking with Tom T. Moore, who has a book called The Gentle Way. Tom is a very, very successful man, and he found a method of being able to move through changes and circumstances in life that he calls The Gentle Way. You're not going to want to miss this. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking about divorce. Now, this is a subject we don't often like to bring up in social conversation. However, Allison Quantorocci, she is a person that really believes that divorce is something that could be handled in a way and manner that doesn't have to be a full-scale war. So I think you'll find her interesting. And then next week, we're going to be talking with Maureen Caudill. We're going to be talking about how she went to a particular institute on the East Coast and went through some particular training and found she came out a psychic. She could do remote viewing. We're going to hear her story. And then also we're going to be talking with Marilyn Sorensen about self-esteem. And there's so much, much more that we've got coming up for you, so you're not going to want to miss any of it. And, yes, this broadcast will be coming tomorrow from Fairbanks, Alaska, and then we're going to be doing one from Anchorage on Thursday and Friday. So we encourage you and welcome you to join us. We've got a lot of things to share with you today, including a wonderful vegetable fondue dish, so easy to fix if you are trying to eat light but trying to eat with good nutrition in mind. This is a dish I think that you're really going to enjoy. So when we come back from break, you're probably going to want to have that pad of paper and pen in hand so that we can share that wonderful recipe with you. Also, are you aware that microbes in your body, microbes can hear. They can. Believe it or not, microbes are listening. We're going to find out more about that when we come back. This is Donna Siebel. This is BBSRadio.com. We're delighted you're with us. Just know that we're going to be back in a moment, and those phone lines are open. The telephone number to call into is 877-876-5227 or 888-810-8322. Don't you go away. We're going to be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Siebel. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Siebel's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Siebel's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Siebel and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Now, by the way, for those of you that are listening in Alaska, you can listen to BBS. Tell your friends about it, because I know so many of you are so computer savvy. And you can listen to the show in the background of whatever you're doing in the way of work. Here is a recipe, and this is BBSRadio.com. Here is a recipe for a vegetable fondue casserole. Now, this is a great way to use some leftovers, but let me give you the information here because it is really good. All you're going to need is a tablespoon of olive oil, one tablespoon of olive oil, one onion thinly sliced, 1 1/4 cup of sliced mushrooms, about 3 ounces. If you're like me, you like a lot of mushrooms, you put in, you know, a little bit more. Just sort of go by a feel of what you like. You're going to need one red or green pepper, and you want to slice that thinly. Now, you need about 2 cups of broccoli, the florets, and that's about 6 ounces. And you need 2 cloves of garlic, and you want to mince that up finely. You need a teaspoon of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of dried thyme, 1/4 teaspoon of pepper. Let me go over those seasonings again. You're going to need 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of dried thyme, 1/4 teaspoon of pepper. Then you can take 1/2 cup of white wine, or if you don't want to use wine, although wine gives a wonderful flavor, you can use chicken or vegetable broth, whatever is your preference, 1/2 cup of any one of those. And you need 6 cups of bread or roll pieces cut into 1-inch cubes. Stale bread is great for this. And, you know, you can use any kind of bread that you like. So 6 cups of bread. You need 2 cups of milk. And if you want, you can use skim milk. 2 cups of milk, 4 eggs, and then you need 1/2 pound of Gruyere cheese. And you want to shred it. And that'll come to about 2 cups. So 8 ounces of Gruyere cheese, and you want to shred it, 2 cups. Now, this is how simple it is. You heat your oven up to 350 degrees, and you want to use a 3-quart baking dish. And you want to spray that baking dish with cooking spray, so that this will not stick. And then in a nonstick skillet, you want to take the oil, your tablespoon of oil, over medium-high heat. You want to put your onions, your mushrooms, you want to put them in, and you want to cook them until they're softened and lightly browned. And what you're doing this for is extracting the moisture out of the vegetables, because otherwise it's going to end up real soggy. So you don't want that. So it's going to take about 5 minutes to do it. And then you want to add your red or green pepper slices, your broccoli, your garlic, all of your seasonings, and you want to stir and cook until they're softened. You don't want them until they're saggy. You want them to cook just until they're beginning to soften. And that's another 5 or 6 minutes. Then you add the wine or your broth, whichever you prefer, and you cook until the liquid evaporates. And that takes about 2 minutes. Then you want to transfer it to a large bowl, and then you add those 6 cups of bread. You mix it all together. Then you're going to transfer it to your 3-quart baking dish. And then, in another bowl, you're going to whisk together the milk, the eggs, 1 cup of cheese, and some salt and pepper, pour over the bread mixture, sprinkle then with the remaining cheese, cover the 3-quart dish with foil, and let it bake for 20 minutes. Then you remove the foil and bake it another 20 minutes or until the cheese is nice and golden. And before you serve it, because it's so hot, then you're going to want to let it sit for maybe 10 minutes. Well, if you're preparing something else to go with this wonderful casserole, a salad or, you know, something else, then you can be doing that after you set it on the table, and then it'll be perfect for serving. And then all of the flavors have a chance to blend. So that's a vegetable fondue casserole. Light, easy, and nutritious. I think you'll really enjoy it. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227 or 888-810-8322. Now, I mentioned to you that microbes can hear. Now, would you have ever thought of that? It wouldn't have even occurred to me. But in today's world, through research, we're realizing that there's a lot about life that is going on. There's a lot about life that is happening that we're coming to understand, that we basically just ignored before because we didn't know how to be aware of certain points of information. Now, you're aware that bats and dolphins use sonar. But did you ever think that bacteria could use sonar? Nobody ever did, until some microbiologists found that a particularly virulent strain of a particular bacterium deploys a sonar-like system to hear the approach of other cells. And then it kills them with a blast of toxin. And the bacterium is the leading cause of hospital-acquired infections. Now, it's called E. faecalis. It normally resides in a benign state in the contents of our own lower intestine, but it can produce an infection if it gets into a wound. Now, most of the time, this is no big deal. We don't have a problem with it. If we get a cut, our immune system fights it off. However, they have found that there is a toxin packing version, they call it, of E. faecalis that's not so nice. This appears to be a rogue strain that has developed its own arsenal of some really nasty genetic traits that it's acquired in hospitals, including a resistance to virtually any antibiotics. And they say people that are infected with it are 5 times more likely to die from it than those with a more benign version. Now, until recently, they didn't know what triggered this bacteria to release this particular life-threatening toxin. And there was a Harvard Medical School ophthalmology research. His name is Michael Gilmore. He and some of his colleagues found that this particular bacteria produces consistently 2 kinds of molecules, one large and one small. And if it has no cell that it can kill in the vicinity, think of it as a life form. It's trying to find something that it can eat to survive. The molecules then stick to one another and drift away. If a cell appears, the large molecules cling to it, freeing the small ones to bounce back into the bacterium alone, sounding the alarm to release the toxin. Whole new level of intelligence that we didn't even think existed. And they say, with this discovery, we feel we might have found the microbe's Achilles heel. If they can block the small molecule, it would silence the sonar. However, they said even the garden variety of this E. faecalis is rugged and hard to kill. His description of it is a real interesting one. He said they are a kind of cockroach of bacteria. You're never going to get them all, and they multiply readily. So it's just, again, this is something that I'm sharing with you, not because I want to make you afraid or apprehensive. It's because I want you to be aware that there are so many individuals out there that because of their curiosity, you'll hear me say this so many times, but I think it bears repeating, because of a willingness to research, to explore, to ask questions, and because we live in a time where people are in a positioning where they can do that, that empowers us to be able to find ways of making our world a better place, whether it is finding a better way to grow food, whether it is learning how to deal with children in a much more effective way, improving medicine, whatever it may be. We have a chance to make a difference if we're willing to question, to look, to listen, and to be willing to change. This is Donna Sebo. My goodness, we are almost out of time. It's been a delight. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Elizabeth Roberts, and I want to thank you for being a part of this BBS Radio family. Invite your friends, invite your other members of family to join us. We'd love to have them as part of our listening audience. And remember always, you are the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. God bless. Have a great one. I'll be talking to you again tomorrow, same time, same place, and we'll have good things to share. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.